What's up, fellas? It's Bush here. Before we get in today's Dynasty podcast, I want to shout out our Dynasty Decisions 2.0. You can get a free Dynasty Decisions 2.0 as an annual mother flocker with only our promo code FSE on Flock Fantasy. We break down your team live on stream, and then within a calendar week, we send you your three biggest decisions to make, an action plan, a snapshot of your team that you can take with you. All of that is available on Flock Fantasy, in addition to our trade calculator, our My Teams, My Portfolio Manager, and so much more. Definitely be sure to check that out if you guys are interested. So now let's get into today's Dynasty podcast. We are just a few weeks away from the Dynasty and redraft season being fully underway when training camp opens. And that means that your buffoon league mates are going to come out of hibernation like a little grizzly bear, and they're going to be ready to make some deals. So today we're going to talk about Dynasty trade targets at every position. Every time I do a video like this, it means a brand new update of our Dynasty trade value chart is live over on Flock Fantasy. That'll be linked down below in the pinned comment for you guys to check that out. Of course, annual mother flockers get a free 2.0 when they sign up. What we're going to do is go through every position, hard buys, soft buys, hard sells, soft sells, etc. A quick review of what the terms mean. A hard buy or a hard sell means that I am buying or selling everywhere. The value is too good to pass up on either direction. League dependent and team dependent for soft buys and soft sells. A soft buy, ideally, you want to buy them for less than what is listed on the trade value chart. A soft sell, ideally, you sell them for more than what is listed on a trade value chart. But again, it's all going to depend on your team. They might just be considered shops or soft buys, like I said. Everyone else in the trade value chart that you guys will see is a hold. Based on market values, they're appropriately priced on the market. But of course, if you're a Thanos, a Juggernaut, a strong contender, you could still buy them. They're just priced basically where they should be. And with each guy, I'm going to go through why they're a sell or a buy, ideally how to buy or sell them as well. Tier ups, tier downs, rookie picks, different assets that are similarly valued. Here are the wide receiver buys and sells right now in Dynasty Fantasy Football. Let's start with the hard buys, and we're going to focus on the rebuilding hard buys first, which is Travis Hunter, Quentin Johnston, and Elijah Surratt. Now, Travis Hunter is the staple. He's in every single one of these videos because, simply put, no wide receiver in Dynasty has more value accumulation potential for a rebuilding team than Travis Hunter. He's the former second overall pick in the draft. He has the physical talent to be one of the best wide receivers in all of Dynasty. He's a Jack 10 suited hand in poker, as I've said. I don't know how it's going to work out for Hunter, but I'm confident that it will. With the wide receiver cornerback stuff deflating his market cost, an injury could happen to Jacksonville's wide receiver core, pushing him into a full-time role. Somebody gets traded, whether it's BTJ or somebody else. He's also a long-term play as well because Jacoby Myers is 30 years old and Parker Washington is an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. The GM, Adam Schefter, Travis Hunter himself, and Liam Cohen have all rebuffed these reports that he's going to play only on defense, or whatever Cam Wolf reported a couple months ago. He will play a lot on offense as he did last season, playing double the amount of snaps on offense as he played on defense. Still, in my opinion, the biggest buy in all of Dynasty, assuming a second rounder is still the price that you're going to pay. And I've, you know, bought him in three different leagues this year. So moving in to Quentin Johnston, who's one of my favorite, absolute favorite projections darlings this season. Even with Ladd McConkey's projection, I recently bumped up Ladd's because, you know, as some of you guys have pointed out to me, I may have been a little bit too low on Ladd McConkey. The reception perception numbers are great. I moved him up to about a 15 point per game projection this season. That being said, I still have Quentin Johnston projected for about 13 plus points per game. He has 8 touchdowns in back-to-back seasons, 730 yards or so in not really playing the entire year. We're talking about a pace of about 900 yards, 9 or 10 touchdowns. And before his injury in week 5 of this season, he was pacing to be a wide receiver 1 in fantasy this season. So again, the Chargers offense, it's going to be nuclear for this for me this year. It is one of my favorite units to invest in. I want every piece that I can get, whether it's Herbert, McConkey, Hampton, Gadsden, or QJ. QJ is not even 25 years old yet. He's the same age as Ladd McConkey, and he is entering a contract season. I think he has this year's Alec Pierce written all over him, maybe even better than that. I wouldn't be shocked if QJ ripped off 1,100 yards, 9 or 10 touchdowns, and was a top 24 receiver in fantasy this year. And for a 25-year-old who was a great prospect, just took him a little bit of time, we could be talking about a guy that really elevates himself on the Dynasty market. Elijah Surratt, one of my prospect crushes, as you guys know. The reason my stance on him is so hard is because he went to a perfect fit. Declan Doyle comes from the Ben Johnson scheme. Ben Johnson featured Amon-Ra St. Brown, and Elijah Surratt has the same strengths as a player as Amon-Ra did. Great hands, great in zone coverage. Due to his college production, he has a really good opportunity to hit the ground running very early on in his rookie season. And people overthought Amon-Ra because he wasn't a super athlete or because he didn't have, you know, the flashy big play numbers that a lot of other receivers in his class did. And Amon-Ra ended up being, other than Ja'Marr Chase, the best receiver from that 2021 class, including Devontae Smith and Jaylen Waddle. So moving into the hard buys that are more contending type of players. Now, those first three guys definitely fit more rebuilds. These guys are going to fit more contending teams. With all four of Rashee Rice, Terry McLaurin, Devontae Adams, and Chris Godwin, the reason I'm buying is simple. If you're a contending receiver, I think their current production is probably going to outweigh their price in Dynasty. And Rashee Rice, obviously, there's a lot of off-the-field issues and things that people have to parse through. But the bottom line is this guy scored nearly 19 fantasy points per game when healthy last season. I have him projected in a conservatively below-average Kansas City Chiefs offense. Keep in mind, I am not projecting the Chiefs to be a top 10 offense in football in 2026 in my projections, which are also available on the site. I actually have Mahomes missing two games as well, and we have two games from Justin Fields. And even still, despite all that, Rashee Rice projects for 16 points per game, just behind CeeDee Lamb, just behind Drake London, just behind A.J. Brown, and actually ahead of what I have projected for Justin Jefferson. You get a discount on Rashee Rice in Dynasty because of the off-the-field stuff. He's kind of a pump-and-dump asset in my eyes, where you can take the probably massive production he's going to give you this season, sell him high in his contract year, especially if he re-signs with Kansas City or if he's hitting free agency or whatever. And my favorite way to buy him is tiering up to him. You could probably sell Chris Olave or Garrett Wilson straight for him right now, maybe even get a plus in some cases, or you could tier up from like a Jameson Williams type asset to go up and get Rashee Rice. Again, I think his production is worth the risk. The bottom line is this: the injury is not a concern, according to Dr. James Ferretti, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago, and he's already been punished for this incident. The 30 days in jail, he was going to have to serve that at some point in time. Hopefully, he can keep his head on straight, at least long enough to get an extension with Kansas City or hit free agency or whatever the case is. Let's talk about these other guys who are more your pure contending assets here. Terry McLaurin of the Commanders, Devontae Adams of the Rams, Chris Godwin of the Buccaneers. At their price, you can get somewhere between, let's say, 12 points per game at the worst case scenario, let's say 900 yards, six touchdowns, all the way up to like 15 plus points per game out of any of these guys if things go well, which is like 1,200 yards, eight touchdowns, 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns type of production. Terry McLaurin is the clear number one wide receiver in Washington. Last time he was fully healthy, Daniels was fully healthy, and he got a full training camp, which was a big issue last year. He produced 15.75 points per game and scored 13 receiving touchdowns on the season. When you're in deeper PPR leagues like I'm in, with three wide receiver start 10, start 11, start 12 type of formats, he's a great every week flex piece for a contending team. Same goes for Devontae Adams, who last season scored 14 touchdowns in 14 games. Now, even in my projections where I've regressed him down to 10 touchdowns in 17 games, he still came out with 14.5 points per game. In my projections, this offense might be the best in football, and you could get a needle-moving, red zone threat, wide receiver flex piece for an early second round pick. Yes, he's 34 years old. Yes, he could fall off, but if you're paying an early to mid second round price tag and you're getting 15 points per game, that is going to be a worthwhile asset. Think about your chances of hitting on a 15 plus point per game season out of any early to mid second round asset. Think about it this year. In this year's class, the early to mid second round players, how likely are they to have a 15 point per game season at any point during their career? That makes me more comfortable buying Devontae Adams. Same goes with Chris Godwin. The last time he was fully healthy in 2024 was a 19.69 point per game receiver in the 17 games or in the 7 games that he played. What if he's the alpha here? What if it's not Emeka Egbuka? I'm not betting on that. I think it will be Emeka Egbuka, but Godwin was well on his way to league winner status the last time he was fully healthy. So you can't convince me that this guy's not worth a mid-second round pick, especially knowing that down the back half of the season, Baker Mayfield was hurt. Offensive line had like 11 different combinations, and Chris Godwin himself was coming off of a severe ankle injury. So with him fully healthy, 2 years removed from that injury, and the fact that he can be moved all around the formation, we're hearing the slot stuff again with Chris Godwin, I do think that he is going to be set for a bounce back season. So that is kind of my hard buys at the wide receiver position. Let's get into my soft buys at the wide receiver position. We're going to start with the rebuilding assets again. Malik Nabers. Based on my conversation with Dr. James Ferretti two, three weeks ago, the surrounding narratives around Malik Nabers, this is how I projected him in my 2026 projections. And I won't get to the Giants projections until the next projections video I do later, probably this weekend. But for the first four games, I expect Malik Nabers to be on the PUP, which means he's not going to be playing games. The next four games after that, so weeks 5 through 8, I expect a ramp-up period where he's not running the full allotment of routes, not running the full snap share, and producing just a 25% target share over that span. His career number is 35%, so he's not going to be quite himself in my projections until about week 9, week 10 of the 2026 NFL season. Quietly, this wide receiver core might be one of the worst in football outside of Malik Nabers for those first 5, 6, 7, 8 games before he's on the field. The ideal rebuilding hammer wide receiver to build around is Malik Nabers because long term, he should be just fine. He's 23 years old. He's an elite athlete. Short term, he helps you tank. He's a perfect asset to have as like your only good wide receiver because he might not be himself this season. He might not even be on the field for the first couple of games. So for me, if I'm tearing things down and I'm tearing down from Puka Nacua, Ja'Marr Chase, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Amon-Ra St. Brown, CeeDee Lamb or Justin Jefferson, getting to Malik Nabers is my number one goal because I think he's one of the best singular dynasty wide receiver buys if you are a rebuilding team. And you can get him as a tear down, you can get him as a tear up, you can sell draft capital for him, although if you're a rebuilding team, you might not want to do that. He is one of my favorite buys for rebuilders right now. Mekhi Lemon, another one of my favorite buys for rebuilders because I just think he's underpriced. He was my wide receiver one in the 2026 class. New offensive coordinator Sean Mannion wants to test Jalen Hurts' ability to throw over the middle of the field. Despite having number one corners on Devontae Smith and Mekhi Lemon seeing slot defensive backs for the most part, nobody seems to think that this guy can produce right away. Your league mates are overthinking the landing spot of Mekhi Lemon and not looking at the prospect caliber. We're talking about a guy whose comps list ranged from Justin Jefferson, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, T. Higgins, Garrett Wilson, Travis Hunter. This is the company of prospect that Mekhi Lemon was in. He won the Biletnikoff Award last year, for fuck's sake. So Mekhi Lemon going to the Philadelphia Eagles will make the Eagles passing game better, not make Mekhi Lemon worse. That is what wide receivers do for the passing games that they go to. It is not as simple as saying Hurts is a bad quarterback throwing the ball. He's not going to get Mekhi Lemon the football. I do not agree with that sentiment, so I am buying him very much. Xavier Worthy. With Rashee Rice's long-term issues, again, I don't love Rashee Rice long-term, but I do love him for the next 1, maybe 2 years. Short-term, Xavier Worthy was dealing with a shoulder injury from the very first play of the NFL season in 2025. We were truly robbed of what Xavier Worthy could have been this season had that not happened to him because he missed the first couple of games and a lot of people speculated, fantasy doctors and others, that he might miss the entire season with the injury that he suffered in week one. His breakout back half of 2024 where we saw him really start to produce and of course the playoff run in the Super Bowl where he had like 2 long touchdowns, anytime you can re-roll an early second round pick into a guy like Xavier Worthy. If you think of this year's rookie class, especially if you haven't had your rookie draft yet, you can re-roll the 201, 202, 203 into Xavier Worthy, who if he was in this class is a much better prospect than any one of the guys that you were getting there, is tethered to Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs long-term, and is the same age as Denzel Boston, as Elijah Surratt, as Chris Bell, and a majority of the receivers you'd be taking in that area anyway. So for me, I am comfortable betting on the fact that Xavier Worthy is an extremely young and raw player entering year 3 of an offense that should be, by the time Mahomes is back and healthy, a back half type of producer and maybe could be a league winner for some people, especially if Rashee Rice continues to be a knucklehead. Troy Franklin and Torrey Horton, I'll keep this brief. I just like them as young pieces. Franklin, nobody seems to care that he's best friends with the quarterback of his team because they've been playing together since, you know, juniors at Oregon. And at age 22, he scored 10.42 PPR points per game and was the wide receiver 30 overall in PPR points, giving you a lot of good best ball spike weeks. So if you're in a dynasty best ball format, I like to throw him in to balance out trades. Like, let's say I'm trading for Malik Nabers and somebody wants like Justin Jefferson and a 2 from me, and I think that's maybe a little bit of an overpay. I might throw Troy Franklin on the back of that deal on top of Malik Nabers to get me a young production piece. Torrey Horton, I just think, is a really, really good buy for basically nothing because he only had 22 targets last year and scored 5 touchdowns on a Seahawks offense that, yes, has Jaxon Smith-Njigba, of course, but Rashid Shaheed, Cooper Kupp, I don't really trust these guys to be long-term target earners. So I think that Torrey Horton is a good buy low because he was a prospect I really liked. And anytime he really got significant snaps last year, he did actually produce pretty decent numbers. So moving in to the other wide receiver soft buys, these are going to be more your contending type of assets. Now, I'm going to take a breath because I go really fast in these videos because I want to make sure I'm getting to everybody in ample time. I think we're making decent time so far. Zay Flowers, T. Higgins, A.J. Brown, and Jalen Waddle. The guys that I'm grouping together here are all four of them worth about a mid to late first round pick in 2027 if you were to trade for them. All four of them, Flowers, T, AJ Brown, and Jalen Waddle, project for 15 plus PPR points per game in my projections this season. And all four of them represent a great wide receiver production piece that I like to go after, which is guys that are not going to be useless a year from now. As much as I like buying McLaurin or Godwin or Adams, these guys that I'm talking about now are going to be more 3-4, maybe even 5-year window type of dynasty assets. And I love playing dynasty in those windows. If you're coming out of a rebuild, you have an extra pick, you're looking to add a receiver and you could trade a late projected first for AJ Brown or a mid to late projected first for T. Higgins, Waddle, or Zay Flowers. These are the types of guys that I love going after. Zay Flowers, number one wide receiver for Lamar Jackson, top 13 wide receiver for Lamar last year in Lamar's worst season. 2.61 yards per out run, a 29% target share. As much as I like Surratt and Lane, this is the number one receiver of this team, and he's not even 26 years old yet, probably playing for a contract extension. T. Higgins, another player in an offense that could throw for nearly 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns. Not to mention, he has never had his 2025 George Pickens run out. Obviously, in 2025, George Pickens was thought to be one of the best number two receivers in the league behind CeeDee Lamb. However, CeeDee Lamb missed time. And then George Pickens in that time was like a 25 point per game producer. And that led to a 17, 18 point per game season from George Pickens. We have never seen that from T. Higgins. In 2024, he had 18.51 points per game with Ja'Marr Chase healthy the entire time. So if Chase were to miss even 4 or 5 games, we could see huge production in that stretch from T. Higgins. He would probably be a top 3, top 5 receiver in my weekly rankings in the weeks that Ja'Marr would be out for. And even if Ja'Marr stays healthy for 17 and T stays healthy for 17, you're looking at a 15 point per game baseline. AJ Brown, he is a top 18 player for me in redraft. If you go to my redraft rankings, me and Zach are pretty much the only ones in that wheelhouse. And when I look at AJ Brown's career, I look at a guy who's been a wide receiver one in 5 of his last 6 seasons. He goes from Jalen Hurts, who struggles passing over the middle, and it looks like they had some off the field, you know, chemistry concerns, to the MVP runner up in his prime, Drake May, just 23, 24 years old. And AJ Brown is only 29. People think this guy's like 34 years old. He has plenty of gas left in the tank, in my opinion. I know that the reception perception numbers were down a little bit, but in my opinion, he was mentally checked out. I think he is going to look a lot closer to 2024 AJ Brown or the back half of 2025 AJ Brown when he was an 18 point per game producer post injury when he came back. What week was that? Week number 11. I think we're going to be seeing the same AJ Brown we've always seen, which is one of the most dominant receivers in the league, now tethered to Drake May. So he's probably, honestly, my favorite pure contending buy in all of Dynasty. Jalen Waddle definitely close in that regard because he is a better target earner than Cortland Sutton, who he's going to be competing for targets with. Despite Cortland Sutton being the number one in Denver for the last 4 seasons and Jalen Waddle being the number 2 in Miami for the last 4 seasons, he has a higher target rate, a higher target share. The Broncos may be one of the most underrated pass-heavy teams in the NFL. Nobody thinks, oh, Denver, huge pass-heavy team. Think about it this way. They had a top 3 defense in football last year, and they were top 6 in neutral pass rate. Usually, when you have a top 3 defense, you're trying to run the football, and they only had a second-year quarterback last year, Bo Nix entering just his 3rd NFL season. So for me, Jalen Waddle, one of the best buys for contending teams. Michael Pittman and Mike Evans, let me pull up Pittman because I didn't have him pulled up. Michael Pittman and Mike Evans are also two of my favorite contending buys at wide receiver, deeper PPR leagues. You can get good flex production from them. I have Michael Pittman ranked straight up in redraft over DK Metcalf. I think he's the best value on the board, or one of the best values on the board in best ball right now. If you go to 2026 rankings, nobody is higher on Michael Pittman on the site than me. And I really just think a 29-year-old receiver who's been very productive in his career, has a top 15 season in points per game and 3 top 24 seasons in points per game. And before Daniel Jones's injury, was producing like a top 12, top 15 receiver himself. I think he's one of the best values on the board in Dynasty. Mike Evans, same thing. He's a 4th round redraft pick. So while the downside of him getting a hamstring injury scares me, the upside of getting 1,000 yards and 10 plus touchdowns makes him intriguing for a mid-second round pick in deep PPR leagues, especially in a start 10 plus, start 11, start 12. Brandon Ayuk, just when I think I'm out, he pulls me back in. The only reason I don't mind buying Brandon Ayuk right now, because he's been in these videos for years, he's going to get cut by San Francisco in the next 2 months. I guarantee he's going to get cut by San Francisco because it's just a cat and mouse that they're playing right now. And eventually San Francisco is going to bite the bullet and cut him. He's going to sign with Washington. He's literally said as such on his own Instagram stories. And here's the other thing. He's in shape. He might mentally appear to be not all the way there, but I think once he gets to Washington, he can still recapture, let's say, 80% of his second team all-pro caliber self in 2023 when he had 1,300 receiving yards alongside a prime Debo Samuel, a prime George Kittle, and a prime Christian McCaffrey. Again, I know it's copium to say that Brandon Ayuk could pay off. It's injury optimism, all that stuff. But he's almost 2 years removed from the injury. And also, too, Brandon Ayuk motivated at 28 years old for the Commanders. Wouldn't shock me if him and Terry McLaurin go shot for shot as the top targets on this team. And I do think it's going to happen. He's going to be a Commander at some point this offseason. And even if you don't believe in Brandon Ayuk, if you buy low on him right now for an early third round pick or a very late second round pick, you could probably flip him for a mid second or even an early to mid second. A few months from now when we're starting to see him produce or play preseason games, he's just out of sight, out of mind. And everyone thinks he's like Antonio Brown 2.0, which could very well be the case, but I don't necessarily think it will be. Moving into Tank Dell, the final guy that I have here, purely medical. Dr. Ferretti said there's a very solid chance, 80, 90% chance that he's back to his previous Tank Dell self, 20 months nearly removed from his surgery. Of course, he shredded his knee. It was a horrible injury, and it's going to be a long road to recovery. However, he missed all of last season. He already had all that time to rehab. Him and CJ Stroud are literally like best friends on the team. So I'm playing into the shower narrative a little bit. I have him projected as the second leading receiver on this team behind only Nico Collins. I think he will out-target and have more yards than Jaden Higgins and Jalen Knoll, because I think that he is the second best receiver when healthy on this team. So if he's out there playing on the outside, which he normally does, people probably assume because he's small, he's a slot receiver. He actually played on the outside like 80, 90% of his rookie season and second season. I think that he could be the second leading receiver on this team. And again, very similar to what I just said with Ayuk, you can get him for nothing right now and probably flip him during training camp if he's cleared for contact and he's playing preseason games, because I do expect that to happen once we get to training camp. If he's not cleared for contact and he's still, you know, unsure for week one or something like that, I would completely change my tune on Dell. But based on the medical side of things and what Dr. Ferretti told me, it looks like he should be ready to go for training camp. So on that basis, I would be buying Tank Dell for cheap. Moving in to my sells at the wide receiver position. Now, perhaps the biggest name in this video and definitely the biggest name on the sells candidates is Justin Jefferson. And it's hard to say this because he's obviously a future Hall of Famer, one of the best receivers in football. I have him projected for just shy of 16 points per game. Now, I should remind you that's almost 5 points per game more than he scored last season. But I think he's the perfect tier up / tier down option to get off of the risk that is this Vikings offense. Using him to get to Malik Nabers, to me, is sound process for a rebuilding team. Using him to pocket a first round producer and also get a good receiver in return. Let's say you could trade Justin Jefferson right now for Christian McCaffrey and Rashee Rice. Let's say you could trade Justin Jefferson right now for Chris Olave plus Derrick Henry. Like, you can legit get some needle moving producers by tearing down from Justin Jefferson. And for me, I worry that he's going to lose a lot of value if he produces 15, 16 points per game, doesn't get back to his true Justin Jefferson self of 18, 19, 20 points per game, because he'll be 28 years old next year going into a situation where they will probably need to upgrade at quarterback and yet another quarterback needy situation there. So again, if you think Kyler Murray is going to smash, then totally ignore what I'm saying right now. But I'm skeptical that Kyler Murray is going to produce like a prime Kirk Cousins or like Sam Darnold in 2024. So Jefferson, as much as it hurts me to say, is probably a sell high at this point in time. Again, a lot of people think he's a buy low. I'm going to be selling him to those people. Garrett Wilson, ironically, back-to-back with Justin Jefferson in FSE lore again. The Jets' passing offense could be pretty anemic. I am not a Geno Smith believer. I never have been, and I actually think we're going to see Cade Klubnik closer to Halloween. Like, I think Geno Smith is that bad that they're going to want to look at their fourth-round quarterback. Omar Cooper, Kenyon Sadiq, A.D. Mitchell, and Mason Taylor, and Breece Hall are way better target competition than we've ever seen for Garrett Wilson. So yes, before his injury, he was producing very well last year, 34% target share. But I think there's more talent on this offense for targets than there really ever has been in Garrett Wilson's career. So again, using him to tier up to Drake London, to Amon-Ra St. Brown, to Malik Nabers, to CeeDee Lamb types, or selling him to tier down to A.J. Brown, Zay Flowers, Jalen Waddle, or T. Higgins, who I think will all outproduce him in redraft this year, to me is sound process. I get the Jets could have a great quarterback upgrade in 2027, but that's kind of what I would tell my league mate if I'm selling Garrett Wilson right now, because that could happen. But the Jets have also not had a quarterback since 1967, so it's not a guarantee they're going to hit on that quarterback. So for me, Garrett Wilson, not a guy that I'm super, super excited about. Luther Burden, you guys know I'm still team Loveland and Rome over Luther Burden, at least as it relates to like target shares. Due to sample size and prospect caliber, because Odunze and Loveland better prospects at their position than Burden as well, I think that Luther's the number three on this team in terms of targets, and also most importantly in terms of routes, because this offense with three tight ends now, Loveland, Roosh, who they draft in the third round, and Komet, are probably going to run a lot more 12 and 13 personnel than people think. And Rome, as the X receiver, is going to be the guy that's on the field 95% of the routes. Burden, as the Z receiver slash slot receiver, might have 80% of the team's routes. So that's something that I don't think people are accounting for with this team and with this player. I think you can use Burden plus a first and get Drake London. So for me, he's just in a price range as a top 15 dynasty receiver right now, where I would use him to tier up, or again, use him to tier down, pick up Jameson Williams in a first for him, pick up Zay Flowers and two twos for him or something like that. That's kind of where I'm at with Luther Burden. These next couple guys, I just think you're paying up for what they did last year. Alec Pierce, Wandale Robinson, and Parker Washington. I think you're paying up for what they did last year. Alec Pierce, the Colts are worse than they were last year, especially in those first 9 to 10 games. And Alec Pierce is coming off of ankle surgery. There's reports he might not be ready for training camp. It stinks. I don't like it. I don't like any bit of it. So for me, I think you should sell high on Alec Pierce, the big contract and all that stuff. Wandale Robinson, great season last year, his best season of his career by far, 13.62 points per game. However, he has more competition for targets in Tennessee than he had last year in New York, because, you know, neighbors missed the entire season pretty much. He just feels overpriced, in my opinion. I don't think I would pay, you know, top 45 wide receiver dynasty value price tag for him. And I also just don't really believe in Cam Ward, which I'll get to with the quarterbacks. Parker Washington, as much as I like the player, and I think actually long-term he's not a bad buy after this season because, you know, he's an unrestricted free agent. We don't know where he's going to go. Brian Thomas played so poorly and Travis Hunter was injured down the stretch that those two things just seem unrepeatable for what Parker Washington was doing. This is a guy that in 2.5 years of his career couldn't even get on the field until Hunter's injury, until Brian Thomas started playing like shit. And I just don't think that he's going to be like this number one receiver. Like underdog ADP right now, he's the number one receiver on this team. And I think that you can sell high on him for that reason. Jaden Higgins and Matthew Golden, neither of them really impressed me as rookies. I know Jaden Higgins is getting buzz for Houston, but part of my thinking with this is that I love Dell so much if healthy, and I also think that Jalen Knoll's an interesting player in the slot, a reception perception darling and all that kind of stuff. Jaden Higgins being the most expensive by far of these three Texans secondary receivers behind Nico just feels mispriced. I think they should all be pretty close together. Take your shot. I don't think he was that impressive as a rookie. He had a couple of decent games down the stretch, but he didn't wow me necessarily. I think he should have been a full-time player a lot sooner than he was. He didn't really beat out Christian Kirk and some of the other guys that were there. And same goes with Matthew Golden. You guys know my thoughts on him. When Jaden Reed misses almost the entire season, Christian Watson and Kraft miss half the season, and Romeo Doubs is really all the Packers had for target competition, it's uninspiring to me that a prospect who was not very good, who had a bad prospect profile, who really was a gamble based on the film, couldn't even really command full-time routes, let alone be like the number two receiver on the team behind Romeo Doubs, who's not anything special himself. Like Matthew Golden couldn't even get on the field and run a full allotment of routes. And every Packers fan, every time I say this, goes to the comments and they go, well, the Packers don't use rookies. The Packers don't use rookies. It's like, if you're a good player, you get on the field, point blank, period. So for me, I just worry about Matthew Golden's ability to be a top tier fantasy receiver. Could he be decent for the Packers? Stretch the field, open things up for everybody around him. Yeah, I think that's exactly what he'll be, but it's probably better for real life than it is for fantasy. So here are the biggest running back buys and running back sells in fantasy football dynasty leagues. The Dynasty Trade Value Chart is now live, like I said earlier in the video. If you guys want to get it with code FSE, annual Motherflocker subs get a free Dynasty Decisions 2.0. We review your team on live, we talk through it, and you get this little souvenir that you guys can see on the screen with your action plan, with your three biggest decisions to help you make more deals, make more trades in dynasty leagues. Using this, plus our trade value chart, plus the trade calculator, plus our My Teams and My Portfolio Manager tools will help you get as many trades done as Danny and I do, which there is not a single YouTube channel that gets more trades done in dynasty leagues than the two of us combined. Let's talk about my dynasty running back hard buys. Chase Brown projects for almost nearly 19 points per game in my 2026 projections. He was on the thumbnail the last time I did this video. So obviously you guys know I'm high on Chase Brown. It's an elite offense. Only Gibbs, Bijan, and Christian McCaffrey outscored Chase Brown down the stretch last year after week 8. 88 targets in 2025. Absolutely absurd receiving production and a great projection yet again. What's not to love here? I like him over Jonathan Taylor and Kenneth Walker in all formats, including Dynasty, and I would sleep like a baby taking him over those guys in a startup. And both of those guys go ahead of him in Dynasty startups and in redraft as well. Contract year two, I expect him to earn his extension in 2026. And I do think, as I've talked about in last video, he is the single best Dynasty running back contending by that anybody can go after. Chase Brown is just mispriced straight up. Jonah Coleman, another player that is very similar to what I said about Elijah Surratt, just a way better prospect than the capital indicates. It's a perfect fit for his skill set. Short term, I expect J.K. Dobbins and R.J. Harvey to be pests, but long term, it's very possible that Jonah Coleman ends up being the guy here. And the reason I think that is because he is the best day three prospect in my model, beating out Cam Scataboo and Bashel Tootin last year. He just shouldn't have gone on day three, point blank period. He only went that low because he isn't very fast. It's the only reason. And we've seen speed doesn't always matter. Kyren Williams, James Conner, David Montgomery, Cam Scataboo last year. If you don't have elite speed, Le'Veon Bell, you can still be a great fantasy running back if you're a great receiver, a great pass protector, good after contact, elusive. And Jonah Coleman is all those things, and he's a perfect fit for this team. So I am buying him in Dynasty aggressively where I can. Rashad White, I just think, frankly, he wins the job in Washington. I think he's the most accomplished, the best receiving back, and he's familiar with Jaden Daniels because he played with him in college. I have a season of sample of Rashad White saying that he was a 300-touch running back in 2023 and also finishes the RB4 overall, RB10 in points per game. So that is way more proven production in the NFL than Ka'Tron Allen, who's a rookie, than Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, who couldn't beat out Chris Rodriguez last year, or than Jerome Ford, who's also in this backfield. So moving in to my soft buys at the running back position, let's talk about the rebuilding guys first. Jadarian Price, Bashel Tootin, and Jonathan Brooks are my soft buys for rebuilders. Medically, Zach Charbonnet doesn't scare me. And the reason he doesn't scare me is because his timeline, he didn't have surgery until mid-February. His timeline would put him at about week 10, assuming all goes well. And that's after week 10, he would have a ramp-up period. They'd have to open his practice window. Basically, we're getting at least 8 to 10 games of Jadarian Price being the starting running back for this team, who is a first-round pick. And when you think about it, with George Helani and Emmanuel Wilson as his backfield competition, Jadarian Price is a first-round pick. How is he not one of the biggest risers by, let's say, October 15th in Dynasty running back rankings? This is a guy that kept the third overall pick in the draft, Jeremiah Love, to sub-200 carries last year. Let me repeat that. Jeremiah Love, in his three-year college football career, never had over 200 carries. That says a lot about Jadarian Price. We look at it in reverse very often, where it's like, hey, Jadarian Price couldn't produce because of Jeremiah Love. But what about what Jadarian Price stopped Jeremiah Love from doing? He would have been the Heisman Trophy winner no problem if Jadarian Price was not on this team. So for me, I think that this is Josh Jacobs 2.0. You watch the film. He's a great prospect. He doesn't have the numbers. He doesn't have the receiving upside that his profile would indicate. But if you watch the film, he can do everything you need him to do. He just played with one of the better running back prospects we've seen in the last decade. That's just point blank period. And not like Josh Jacobs or, you know, Sony Michel or some of these Miles Sanders guys that shared backfields who were good prospects and high draft picks. He goes to a team that just won the Super Bowl, who has a good offensive line, who has a good offense overall, and loves to run the football as well. So for me, Jadarian Price, very, very good buy for rebuilders or contenders. Honestly, I'm fine taking the risk in both cases. I'm also willing to take the risk in both cases for Bashel Tootin, because especially if you're a running back needy team who's like coming out of a rebuild, like you're in a house money situation, both of these two guys fit very well. Chris Rodriguez will be involved, but Chris Rodriguez is pretty mid, and Tootin was a top tier day three prospect, especially, like I said, Cam Scataboo and Jonah Coleman. These guys shouldn't have been day three picks. They should have been second or third rounders, but they fell to day three for one reason or another. He's truly the closest thing we've seen to Bucky Irving. He is. And Liam Cohen is very familiar with Bucky Irving. And also, too, like, Bashel Tootin has speed unlike Bucky Irving's speed. He has 4.3 speed. He ran a 4.32 at the combine. And Chris Rodriguez might scare me a little bit just because of the familiarity with Liam Cohen, because he coached him at Kentucky, but he doesn't scare me a lot. He scares me a little, to the point that I can't get over my skis with Bashel Tootin, but I do think 55, 60, 65% of the opportunities, if he can do that We're talking about a 13, 14, 15 point per game running back as a second year player. And I think that also long term, Chris Rodriguez will probably be a non-issue for the outcome of this backfield. So for me, Bashel Tuten, Jadarian Price, some of my favorite rebuilding buys. Jonathan Brooks, also one of my favorite rebuilding running back buys. The comments section will tell me there's a 0% chance that Jonathan Brooks ever becomes anything in the NFL after two ACL tears. But here's what the medical stuff says. Dr. James Ferretti said that the medical journals listed as about a 55, 60% chance that he's back to 100% of his prior form. Let me repeat that. 60% chance, give or take, that he's back to exactly the prospect that we saw in November of 2024 coming out of Texas. So again, let me remind you what kind of prospect that was. He was a top 40 pick in the NFL draft despite coming off an ACL tear. He was better than Bucky Irving, than Blake Corum, than Tyrone Tracy, some of the backs in his class. And by the way, Brooks is the same age as Price, as Coleman, as every top back in this year's class. So he's still very, very young, except for Jeremiah Love and Nick Singleton from this class who are younger than him. So Carolina, this is a team that wants to run the football. Chuba Hubbard lost his job to Rico Dowdle at some point last year, and I think it is worth taking the risk that Jonathan Brooks is the same player he was at Texas, or 90% of that player. Worst case scenario, you wasted a mid-second round pick. Best case scenario, he is a dynasty RB1 by the end of the 2026 season, which is absolutely in his range of outcomes based on the caliber of prospect he was, the receiving skill set he had at Texas, and so on. So moving into the contending soft running back buys, Devon Achane, David Montgomery, Tony Pollard, Jordan Mason, and Aaron Jones. Devon Achane, even with the Dolphins, I projected the Dolphins this bad. Dead last in points per game, dead last in offensive pace of play, total pass rate, and total plays. So literally the worst offense in the league by every statistical measure. And Devon Achane still came out with 17 points per game in my projections, which, by the way, would be the worst season of his illustrious three-year career already. But 17 points per game is a locked and loaded top 6 to 8 fantasy running back. So for those of you guys that are wondering which running back contending pieces you can buy to help win your championship this year, Devon Achane has the Dolphins stink on him right now. And the manager might be looking to sell him because they think the Dolphins will be shit, but that might be a short-term problem. They could have Arch Manning as their quarterback next year, or Jeremiah Smith maybe as their wide receiver one next year. Achane has 100 target upside, 100 catch upside realistically, and it has never been worse than 17 points per game in his three-year career. He has been an awesome player, an exceptional receiving workload. Yes, he might lose some efficiency with Mike McDaniel, which I accounted for. I gave him 4.7 yards per carry in my projections, which would be a very low total compared to his career average. And even still, he's like a 17 point per game producer. So if you're a contending team, go all the way up for Devon Achane because he is going to produce like crazy, even despite being on maybe the worst offense in football. David Montgomery. I really like David Montgomery from a redraft perspective. And when you're an aging running back, you better have a good redraft projection. Montgomery steps right into essentially 2024 Joe Mixon. The way I'm thinking about this is that the Texans have an elite defense. They have a quarterback who's, let's call it, in a prove it year. They want to run the ball 300 plus times with David Montgomery. They just do. That's going to be their philosophy. You got a defensive head coach like year two, Nick Cayley comes from the Rams scheme. They love to run the football. David Montgomery has a very, very good workload ahead of him. And you can get in trouble projecting workloads for older running backs. But David Montgomery's had basically 3 years now of reduced workload in Detroit where he hasn't been the bell cow running back. So he actually has fresh legs here. So if you're looking to buy a cheap running back for a mid second round pick, David Montgomery is probably your guy. Tony Pollard, probably for a mid to late second round pick, I also like as well, because while Nick Singleton to me is a threat long-term, I'm not really concerned with Tajay Spears. He's a free agent after this year and he hasn't been healthy. He should be, Tony Pollard, a 250 carry plus guy this year, as we've seen really over the last 3 years. He's been about that 250 carry workload. One of just four running backs in the NFL to rush for 1,000 plus yards in four straight seasons. So this guy has been consistently a productive running back, and the Titans offense, even though I'm not super high on it, should at least be improved from the years that he's been the Titans starter. Cam Ward in year two, Carnell Tate coming in, Wandale Robinson, etc. And then with this Vikings duo, Jordan Mason and Aaron Jones. Take your pick, man. I prefer Aaron Jones. In my projections, I projected Aaron Jones as the starting running back. The reason I did that is because when he was healthy last year with Jordan Mason, he was the starting running back. And not only that, he was getting the receiving workload, which I think is pretty valuable. While Jordan Mason may have the touchdown upside, if you want to call it that, and he's younger, of course, he's 27 versus 31 or almost 32 for Aaron Jones. I just think Aaron Jones is still a pretty good player. He's still been efficient when he's on the field. As long as he stays healthy, I think he will be the starting running back. So take your pick. Throw a third round pick at either of these guys. Throw a late second round pick at both of these guys if somebody in your league has both of them. I think that they could be a productive backfield. I'm just not sure exactly how productive they will be. Moving into the running back sells. Travis Etienne, I love the contract. I like the pace of the offense, but I hate the 2024 version of Travis Etienne that still lingers in my mind, especially now. Without Liam Cohen calling the shots, we saw what happened the last time a running back lost Liam Cohen. That was Bucky Irving. He had, you know, much worse efficiency without Liam Cohen. Kellen Moore is a good play caller, but this run scheme that Liam Cohen runs is different. Look what happened to Bucky Irving without him. My main gripe here, too, is Alvin Kamara. I think he's still one of the better running back receiving backs in the NFL. I think he's going to take Travis Etienne off the field in obvious receiving situations. I also know Alvin Kamara to be one of the best goal line running backs of the last decade. Is he going to take away red zone touches from Travis Etienne as well? I also, when I went through the Saints projections, like all this pass heavy, up tempo, pace of play stuff was probably due to the fact that they couldn't run the ball. So they might not be as up tempo, as pass heavy as people are thinking as well. So for me with Travis Etienne, I would use him to tier up, try and use him to get to Jadarian Price, try and use him to tier sideways into Bashel Tootin, who replaces him. That's kind of how I'm viewing him. Moving into Blake Corum, Kyren Williams is still the starting running back, fellas. You might be thinking, oh, well, Kyren's like 27, 28 years old, right? Surely Blake Corum will take over soon. Kyren Williams, 25.8 years old, fellas. Corum is 2021 AJ Dillon, where everybody overvalued him thinking he was going to take over the starting job at some point. And he's essentially just a good handcuff. Like, we can call Blake Corum what he is, a great handcuff, one of the best in football. But he is not starting over Kyren Williams under any circumstances, as long as Kyren Williams has two working ankles, legs, knees, and so on. So for me, Kyren Williams, very clearly the starting running back here. Blake Corum, a great handcuff, but that is all I'm viewing him really to be. Rico Dowdle, another guy that I think people are getting a little over their skis on. I think that Rico Dowdle has a chance to be a really good early down guy for Pittsburgh because Mike McCarthy's familiar with him and so on. But the role that I want is Jaylen Warren's role, because he had a 60 catch season a couple of years ago, and Aaron Rodgers has the lowest ADOT, the fastest time to throw in the NFL. I think the valuable touches in this backfield are receiving touches, not goal line touches, because Pittsburgh's not like an exceptional team. If there's a running back who has an 80-90 target projection, I want them, and that is Jaylen Warren's projection and not Rico Dowdle's projection. Moving into J.K. Dobbins, I think maybe you could wait to sell him in week one, week two, week three, when he's maybe the starting running back of this team. But I'm also worried that like Coleman comes out and starts right away, or Harvey comes out and starts right away. This is just a crowded backfield. So for me, if people think J.K. Dobbins is going to be last year's version of J.K. Dobbins, which was really good, I would probably just sell him now and not worry about that headache, because as we know with J.K. Dobbins, he can get injured at any point in time, and then he's probably cooked from a value perspective. Zach Charbonnet, I mean, I already talked about his injury that he's dealing with. I don't know why the hell he's still a top 30 dynasty running back when I don't even really expect him to play in 2026, and he's a UFA in 2026 or 2027 free agency, and he probably won't get very much money on the market because he probably won't play much this year. So I would buy him later when his price dips, but I would not be holding him right now. I would sell high on him, or sell low, I guess, on him. Woody Marks, I'm just bullish on David Montgomery. Like I said, I expect Woody Marks to be a pass catching running back, but that's pretty much it. So yeah, that's the running back position. Now, here are the quarterback buys and sells for Dynasty Fantasy Football. Mainly a super flex frame of mind here, but one quarterback prices are also available on the screen. So let's talk about the rebuilding quarterback buys, or let's call them like the young contender quarterback buys, because all the quarterbacks on this list are age 28 or younger. So they kind of fit every team archetype, but definitely better for generally rebuilding teams. Justin Herbert, again, I'm just so high on this Chargers offense. I think we're going to see 2020 and 2021 Justin Herbert come back, which was a 22 point per game quarterback in fantasy. And I also think, too, that we might see the highest efficiency, the highest rushing of Justin Herbert's career, because last season, 5.2 carries per game, 31.1 rushing yards per game. Those were career highs. So if you combined 2021 Justin Herbert's passing production with 2025 Justin Herbert's rushing production, we might get a league-winning quarterback here. And Justin Herbert right now on the dynasty market is valued lower than Jackson Dart. Patrick Mahomes coming off an ACL tear, and Jalen Hurts. Like, what are we doing here? How is this guy not closer to Joe Burrow than he is to those other guys? So for me, I think if you need a contending quarterback and you got the cojones and the assets to go buy a big big fish, to me, it's Justin Herbert. He's the best contending buy at quarterback that you can go make. And same goes for Trevor Lawrence. I mean, he was top five in MVP voting last year. He was a top five fantasy quarterback, and it's the second year of Liam Cohen. He's my favorite tier up. If you have, like, let's say a Jordan Love or a Cam Ward or a Tyler Shuck, and you're like, I would like a better second quarterback than that, he's my favorite guy to go after, him and Brock Purdy both, who I'm going to talk about in a second, because he might have, Trevor Lawrence, the deepest pass-catching core in the NFL with Hunter, with Thomas, with Parker Washington, Jacoby Myers, and Brenton Strange. We can't decide between all these guys. Of course, you guys know my stance on those players, but the answer might just be, take Trevor Lawrence. He has a bunch of good weapons around him, and same goes for Brock Purdy, who at age 26 now, he has proven he can carry his offense, man. It was the best season of his career, 19.71 fantasy points per game. He now gets a top 35 NFL draft pick wide receiver, Deshaun Stribling, who was a reach, but still an addition nonetheless, and Mike Evans, who comes in with, other than last year, every season having 1,000 yards, double-digit type of touchdown score. I think that Brock Purdy could have a really, really good year this year, and both Lawrence and Purdy, to me, are really cheap production assets, and you might get better seasons out of them than you even do out of Jalen Hurts or Patrick Mahomes or Jackson Dart or, hell, even Joe Burrow or Jaden Daniels, for that matter, who are going way higher in dynasty value. So Drew Aller and Cole Payton, both rookie quarterbacks, pure rebuilding upside swings for me. Aller, one of my favorite prospects in the dynasty cycle. You guys know that. I had him graded above Ty Simpson as my QB2. I think he's like a developmental version of Jackson Dart. So I like the upside of him in the Pittsburgh Steelers working behind Aaron Rodgers. Cole Payton, I actually really love the rushing upside of. Now, I know there's not a whole lot of optimism around him starting very soon because they're supposedly maybe in on quarterbacks going forward. But Cole Payton, to me, I think is like Sam Howell 2.0. If he's developed and gets an opportunity to start, I think that he can be very good from a rushing perspective. So I'll take the upside swing at the cheap cost that he's going. The pure contending buys at quarterback, I have Dak Prescott, Jared Goff, and Kyler Murray. I'll kind of speed these ones up here. Jared Goff is very straightforward, and Dak Prescott both. Very straightforward, 4,500-yard passing threats, and also 30-plus touchdown passing threats as well. Because when you think about their offenses, you have Jared Goff with the easiest schedule in a dome. The wide receiver 1-2 and tight end stack that these two quarterbacks have are very, very good. And they also, at 32 years old, have a discounted price on the dynasty market because people know that they're not going to increase in market value, which is absolutely true. But I would be willing to say that there's a chance that Dak and Goff could outscore Mahomes and Hurts and those types of guys. And you might be able to tier off of, let's say, a Jordan Love, or even all the way up to a Patrick Mahomes, Hurts, or somebody like that, and get Dak Prescott a first and a productive running back or something like that. So for me, I think that going after these two quarterbacks, if you're a contending team in need of a quarterback to upgrade, these are like the two premier options that you can just send your late first round pick for and be on your merry way as a contending team, or even maybe get them for less, like I said, in a tier down or a tier up. Kyler Murray is 29, so he's essentially a contending buy as well. But if you're of the opinion he's going to have a career resurgence, then he could actually increase in value more so than these other two guys that I just talked about. Even as someone who's somewhat lower on Justin Jefferson and this offense in general, I can admit that if Kyler Murray came out and had 4,000 passing yards and 30 total touchdowns, he'd probably get an extension from Minnesota. And he would probably be like quarterback 15 on the dynasty market. And right now, he's being priced as if he's going to fail. He's being priced at quarterback 25 on the market. And to me, that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense because Justin Jefferson is being priced like he had a quarterback upgrade from last year, but Kyler Murray is not being priced higher than JJ McCarthy was priced last season. So it's really weird to me. I think that the way I'm going to play like being wrong about Justin Jefferson is through the quarterback, because I think if Justin Jefferson has a great season, it probably meant that Kyler Murray had a great season. So that's kind of how I'm viewing this. The quarterback sells. I have Jackson Dart, who is going very, very high in dynasty quarterback lore right now. I love the rushing upside, but the thing I just said with Malik Nabers, this is maybe one of the worst wide receiver cores in the NFL. I was really hoping for Jackson Dart's sake that they would have added like Jordan Tyson to this team. And also too, I think that's a downgrade at offensive coordinator and coach. Like, call me crazy. I think Brian Daboll was a good coach, man. I think he was definitely a better play caller than Matt Nagy at the very least. And I am not optimistic that John Harbaugh is going to turn this team into a 10-win football team. I actually think it's more likely that he's Pete Carroll from last year of the Las Vegas Raiders than he is Jim Harbaugh for the Chargers or whatever. So again, I'm a little worried that Jackson Dart is overpriced as a result. And again, I would use him to tier up, use him to get up to Justin Herbert, use him to tier down into Dak Prescott plus or whatever the case is, or tier him straight horizontally to Bo Nix, who I would prefer. Cam Ward, I just didn't see enough to call this guy a top 15 dynasty quarterback. And that is what the market, including a lot of the experts on the site, actually, none of us are viewing him really. Actually, yeah, Danny's up there at quarterback 17. I just think he's more QB 20 to 22 in dynasty because of what I saw from him his rookie season. I think there's people out there, keep trade cut included, that have him like top 15 in dynasty quarterbacks. So, like, yes, he has Carnell Tate now. He has, Wandale Robinson now. But I got to just see this guy play like a legit franchise quarterback before I call him a top 15 dynasty quarterback. Tyler Shuck, I'm not really high on either of these two second year guys, or I guess all three of them. But at least with Tyler Shuck, you've seen some good production out of him. So if you're going to say, oh, I have Shuck over Cam Ward, I think that's reasonable. With defenses having tape on Tyler Shuck now, who in my opinion doesn't do anything particularly elite, I think he's got a good arm, good accuracy, good mobility, but I think the defenses will be able to catch up to him. The bright side is that he has Olave and Jordan Tyson and those types of guys. The downside risk here to me is like year two of Drew Lock. When going into year two of Drew Lock, Denver had Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton and Noah Fant, Javonte Williams. We're all excited about Drew Lock, and then he kind of couldn't put it all together because he wasn't the caliber of quarterback that people thought he was. That's kind of how I would view the bad scenario of Tyler Shuck. Obviously, the good scenario is that, you know, he looks like Kirk Cousins early on in his career. Like, that's definitely possible. I just am lower on Tyler Shuck, the player, lower on the Saints, the offense, so I'm selling him. Malik Willis, the Dolphins suck and will suck. Malik Willis is a bridge quarterback. I do not expect Malik Willis to be the quarterback of this team beyond the season, and I actually would go as far as to say I expect Quinn Ewers to start games at some point. So do not, I've seen people say this, do not buy Malik Willis thinking that you have a quarterback three locked and loaded for your contending roster. I don't like buying quarterbacks who don't have long-term starting job security, and unless you think the Miami Dolphins are going to be some awesome offense, which nobody is projecting, then Malik Willis is going to get replaced by Arch Manning or Dante Moore or one of the quarterbacks in next year's class. So for me, he's a stopgap bridge quarterback. And like I said, it wouldn't shock me if by Thanksgiving, Quinn Ewers is starting games. So Michael Penix, Tua is a better version of Penix in every facet. I don't care what anyone says. Michael Penix is not a good quarterback. He has a good arm. He has some mobility when he wants to. Tua should and is favored to win this job. I expect Tua to start the majority of the games this year, if not all of the games. And in some leagues, people still think Michael Penix is worth an early second round pick or even a late first round pick. Maybe that's not your league, but if you find the Michael Penix truther in your league who needs a third quarterback desperately, before he's worth very little on the open market to maybe nothing on the open market, I would get out of him as soon as humanly possible. Anyone looking for tight end upgrades in Dynasty, these are my favorites to go after. Now, of course, I want to preface this with, if you have a Juggernaut or a Thanos type of archetype team, which is available in our My Portfolio Manager, I would suggest going and paying up for Brock Bowers, going and paying up for McBride, Loveland, or Tyler Warren, assuming you have the assets to do that. On a true hammer, those are your best options in Dynasty. However, if you want cheaper options, that's what I have you covered for here now. Sam Laporta, the Lions are my Giga Smash offense. Like I said, them and the Chargers, those are two of the offenses I think can just crush expectations. Sam Laporta has been a top nine fantasy tight end in all three seasons of his career, and it's come at ages where you're not supposed to peak as a tight end. At age 22, he was a top three tight end in fantasy. That's not normal for the position. 25 years old, which is what he is right now, and a tight end's best years typically being age 26 to 29, he has his prime all set out in front of him, and he also has contingent upside if St. Brown or J-Mo miss any time. He is one of my favorite tight end buys in Dynasty, and probably my favorite tight end pick overall in redraft for fantasy. Dalton Kincaid, also at age 25 last year, led all tight ends in yards per out run. He was very efficient on his targets. The problem for Dalton Kincaid was he couldn't stay healthy, man. All he has to do is stay healthy. And word on the street is that he's working with some sports science guys, kind of like what Christian Watson did with his hamstring stuff. I could see Dalton Kincaid kind of coming out of nowhere to some degree at ADP, Dynasty, and Redraft and being a top three fantasy tight end because Josh Allen is that good and the Bills offense is that good. And it wouldn't shock me if Dalton Kincaid had like a 2018 Eric Ebron type of year where he has like 13 receiving touchdowns because Josh Allen is like the MVP of the NFL. So moving in to Jake Ferguson, who also, I think people forget how good he was last season. Week 14 before his calf injury, Ferguson was a tight end 5 in PPR points per game to that point in the season, tight end 2 in overall points at that point in the season. He has contingent value if anything happens to Pickens and Lamb, as we saw last year. And like I said, man, this guy was on an absolute mammoth run before he started to deal with injuries in the late portion of the season last year. Justin Jolie and Eli Raridan, These were just two of my favorite tight end prospects in the entire draft. Call me crazy, but I love betting on tight ends who go to perfect landing spots for their skill set. Justin Jolie, the like ceiling comp for him was Evan Ingram, who he is going to replace in the long term. The ceiling comp for Eli Raridan was Hunter Henry, who he's going to replace in the long term. Both of these guys have exceptional hands. Both of these guys are good athletes. Both of them have pretty good receiving profiles as well. And both of them are tethered to young quarterbacks who I believe in long term, Drake May and Bo Nix, respectively. Talking about the tight end sells, I'll keep this one brief. Mark Andrews just may not be the same player he once was. His play has deteriorated over time, and the only thing carrying him still are touchdowns. And for me, when you add in Declan Doyle as the offensive coordinator, and they draft two of my top eight receivers in the 2026 wide receiver class with Surratt and Lane, I think that will shift focus away from the 12 personnel and the red zone touchdowns for the tight ends, because I think that's how Declan Doyle wants to run the offense. So where Mark Andrews made his hay, I'm going to sell high on the fact that Isaiah Likely is now gone. Charlie Kolar is now gone. And your league mates, especially casual ones, will see Mark Andrews' big name, look up who left in free agency or whatever, or you can even tell them in the DMs, and they'll go, oh my God, he's going to have a great season this year. There's no more Isaiah Likely. There's no more Charlie Kolar. And I think he could still have a decent season. I just don't see why he's like tight end 15 or 16 in Dynasty with the age that he's at and the production that he's given you the last couple of years. Chigakonkwo, I guess I'm just skeptical that he's even good. Like, people seem to think that he's going to break out with Washington this year, but in 4 years in Tennessee, not only could he not start for the team full time, 80% plus of the routes, he also just never produced. Like, he never had a top 24 PPR point per game season at tight end, which is an extremely low bar, despite being in a pretty barren wide receiver core where targets were available. I guess you could argue, like, the Commanders are a much better team. Jayden Daniels is a much better quarterback than all of those Titans teams were. But targets were a problem for Chig. If he was getting a bunch of targets, like 4.6 targets per game is like not bad. If he was getting a bunch of targets, then I would say, okay, yeah, like big contract, new team, etc. I also expect Brandon Ayuk to sign there at some point, so that kind of hurts his case as well. But that is it. Hopefully, I need to take a breath here for a second. Hopefully I didn't go too fast for you guys. Slow me down to 0.75x speed if you need to. That was Dynasty Trade Targets by Position, the June 29th edition. I will probably have another version of this video in August at some point, maybe late July. I am recording this 4 days away from my wedding, so Danny will be in charge while the other parent is out on vacation for a little bit. I will be leaving on Saturday. I will be gone until the following Monday, so I'll be out of here for early portion of July. But if you guys enjoyed this video, leave a like down below, subscribe to the channel. I'm going to split this video. I've never done this before with this video series, but I think it would probably do well and you guys would appreciate it. I'm going to split this video into four different videos by position, so that if you guys are only looking for tight end buys or wide receiver buys or running back buys, you might be able to watch a video like that in shorter succession if you don't care about the other positions. Because I know with a dynasty roster, sometimes you only need one position, and that might make more sense for some people. But of course, if you watch this whole video, leave me a like down below. And of course, to get the trade value chart, to get the portfolio manager, I will share my screen one more time. To get everything that we have available to you on the site, the My Teams, My Portfolio Manager, can see all of your teams. You can sort by my rankings if you're a site subscriber. You can sort by contender, which pulls underdog ADP to see how good your contenders are. If you go to the rankings tab, you can use that for startups. If you want to get a Dynasty Decisions 2.0, if you sign up for an annual Mother Flocker, you will get that for free. We live workshop your team review, and then we give you guys three actionable pieces of advice and also an action plan to improve your dynasty roster. So if that interests you, that'll be linked down below in the pinned comment. Redraft, folks, the season pass is live right now. Check that out as well. But with that being said, peace out. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks for making it all the way to the end of the Fantasy Stock Exchange show. A reminder, all of you guys right now can get all of our bonus content, rankings, draft guides, and everything in between over on flockfantasy.com. Use the promo code FSE when you sign up for a 7-day free trial, 30% off any of the packages, and a free Dynasty Decisions 2.0 team breakdown for every annual Mother Flocker. Appreciate you, and check it out.